This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Imagine a bubbling, vibrant red stew sitting right in front of you.
Oh yeah, best feeling.
Right. And the steam rising off the bowl is just intensely aromatic. It's tangy, it's spicy, and deeply, deeply savory.
Just hitting all the right notes.
Exactly. And so you take that first spoonful, and the mouthfeel is incredibly rich. I mean, it tastes so heavy and satisfying that you immediately assume like a thick piece of pork shoulder or maybe a fatty beef short rib has been simmering in that pot for
Oh,
hours.
for sure. You'd think it's been rendering out all its fat to build that really complex depth.
But what if I told you there is absolutely no meat in that pot? Like zero.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. And what if I also told you that that entire complex flavor profile was built from scratch in exactly 40 minutes?
It honestly sounds like a, well, like a culinary magic trick,
It really does.
defying all the traditional rules of how we usually build deep flavors in a kitchen.
It completely flips the script. And welcome to another deep dive. Today, we are pulling you right into the kitchen with us, and our mission is to understand how that trick actually works.
Yeah, it's a fun one today.
We're unpacking this really comprehensive culinary guide. It's essentially a masterclass text dedicated to the undisputed heavyweight champion of Korean comfort food. We are talking about kimchi jjigae.
The absolute classic.
So whether you are, an avid home cook who spends weekends grinding your own spices, or just someone who really loves eating good food and wants to understand how it gets onto your plate, unpacking the architecture of this one specific dish is kind of the ultimate shortcut.
It really is the perfect gateway to becoming well-versed in Korean culinary traditions as a whole.
So true. And the guide we are analyzing today is so fascinating because it is not just a simple list of ingredients.
Right, it's not your standard recipe blog post.
No, not at all.
It is a highly structured framework. It's specifically designed to help an international audience understand, really, the soul of the dish. It unpacks what the stew actually is, the specific parameters required to cook it, and most importantly, what it represents when you are trying to recreate it, far away from its geographical origin.
Right. So before we can even think about turning on the stove or like tasting anything, we need to know exactly what we are dealing with here.
We have to define it first.
Exactly. And the text starts by decoding the linguistic identity of the dish. It gives us the Romanized spelling, kimchi jjigae, all one word. But then it immediately branches out. It gives us the English search hint, kimchi stew, and it even provides the Spanish translation, guiso de kimchi.
And, the inclusion of those translations tells a massive story about the dish's global footprint.
Oh, 100%.
Because the word jjigae translates directly to stew, which right away establishes a very strict culinary category.
Right, sets expectations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It tells the cook immediately about the liquid to solid ratio. It's not a thin soup meant to be sipped as a light starter.
Like a broth or something.
Right. A jjigae is dense. It's heavy with ingredients, and it's meant to be eaten alongside rice as a shared main course.
That makes total sense.
And by providing terms like guso de kimchi, the guide acknowledges that this is no longer just a local secret kept in regional kitchens.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere now.
Home cooks in Madrid, in Mexico City, in, Ohio, they are actively searching for the blueprint to make this. It is a global phenomenon requiring a standardized profile.
I just love that phrase, guiso de kimchi. It paints such a vivid picture of food traveling across borders and adapting to new
He
tongues.
really does.
But anyone actually trying to make it, regardless of what language they speak, is going to run into the very specific cooking parameters this guide sets up.
Yeah, there are rules.
Right. It defines the dish with a medium difficulty level, a medium spiciness level, and a strict 40-minute preparation and cooking time.
Which is such a specific window.
It really is. When I saw 40 minutes and medium difficulty, my mind immediately went to what I call the perfect weeknight dinner equation.
Oh, the Holy Grail for any home cook looking at the clock at 6 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Exactly. You want something that challenges you just enough to feel like you are actually practicing a craft, right? Like you aren't just pushing buttons on a microwave or pouring boiling water over instant noodles.
Right, you want to feel like you cooked.
Yes. But it has to be accessible enough that you aren't embarking on a 3-hour culinary marathon that leaves you like scrubbing a mountain of pots at midnight.
Nobody wants that on a Tuesday.
Nobody. But I do have to push back a bit on the label itself, just based on what the source material is saying. Because in the culinary world, medium can sometimes be a bit of a trap for beginners.
How so?
Well, does medium here secretly mean, like, if you look away from the pot for 10 seconds, the whole thing is ruined? Or does it just mean you have to be present and pay attention?
Oh, I see what you mean. No, it is definitely about mindfulness at the stove rather than executing elite technical skills.
Okay, that's a relief.
Yeah, you do not need a culinary degree to make a stew. You don't have to master complex knife work or emulsify a delicate French sauce. Fundamentally, you're just simmering ingredients in liquid.
So where does the medium come from then?
The medium rating really stems from ingredient management and sequencing. You cannot just dump every single component into cold water, crank the burner to high, and walk away.
Oh, right. It's not a slow cooker recipe.
Exactly. The text is teaching the cook how to manage the simmer, knowing precisely when to introduce heat to extract the flavors, and watching how the ingredients interact over time.
Okay, so it's about respecting the process, not performing kitchen acrobatics.
Precisely.
And that 40-minute timer makes so much sense when you think about the physical science of making a stew. Because if you boil vegetables for 10 minutes, you just have a watery, disjointed soup.
Right. Nothing is melded together.
But if you boil them for 3 hours, everything disintegrates into an unrecognizable mush.
Which is arguably
much worse.
40 minutes is the absolute sweet spot for the texture of this dish. It allows the liquid to reduce down just enough to thicken into a proper jjigae, forcing the flavors to concentrate.
While keeping the texture intact.
Right, ensuring the cabbage turns beautifully translucent, but still retains a slight structural bite.
But that perfect time frame really forces us to look at what is actually simmering inside the pot. And this was the absolute biggest aha moment for me when reviewing this guide.
The dietary profile.
Yes. Yeah. Because we established earlier that when people think of a rich, comforting winter stew, they instantly picture a heavy meat base.
Always.
Braised short ribs falling off the bone, or thick cuts of pork belly rendering their fat into the broth to just coat your palate.
Yeah, animal fat has always been the universal global shortcut to building a rich flavor profile.
Right.
But the dietary parameters of this specific guide emphatically remove that crutch. It is definitively, explicitly vegetarian friendly.
Which is wild for a stew like this.
It really is. The text states a hard no to the inclusion of pork, no to beef, no to chicken, and no to seafood.
Wait, let me pause on that because it sounds completely counterintuitive to how stews work.
It does seem backwards.
Right. We are taking a deeply savory, complex dish and stripping away the pork fats, the beef bones, and the anchovy broths that typically give a jjigae its heavy body.
Taking away all the usual heavy hitters.
Exactly. We are talking about a totally meat-free, seafood-free bowl. So how on earth does it achieve that heavy target taste? I mean, if we remove the meat, aren't we literally just boiling spicy cabbage in water?
You'd think so, but the answer lies entirely in the underlying biology of the core ingredient.
Okay, biology. I'm listening.
Because this framework excludes animal proteins, the entire dish must rely on the sheer, unadulterated power of fermentation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We are not talking about fresh, crunchy cabbage from the produce aisle. We are talking about kimchi that has been sitting, aging, and actively fermenting over time.
So time is the ingredient here.
Exactly. During that process, lactic acid bacteria break down the carbohydrates and proteins in the cabbage, the garlic, and the chili, and they produce incredibly complex amino acids, specifically glutamates.
And glutamates are the exact compounds that give us umami, right?
Yes.
The savory, meaty flavor profile we associate with a seared steak or like aged Parmesan.
Exactly. And when you take that highly fermented aged kimchi and force it through that strict 40-minute stewing process we talked about, the heat forces the cabbage to release those complex acids.
Releasing them straight into the broth.
And straight into the liquid. It creates a rich, velvet-like mouthfeel. The science of the fermentation physically tricks your palate into believing you are consuming animal fat, when in reality, you are experiencing the acidic depth of time and bacterial breakdown.
That is just, it's a brilliant chemical illusion.
It really is.
The fermentation is doing all the heavy lifting that a piece of pork shoulder normally would. And from a practical standpoint, this makes the dish phenomenally accessible.
Completely.
I noticed the guide points out that specific allergies or religious dietary restrictions aren't even specified in the text.
Because they don't need to be.
Exactly. By establishing this completely meat-free and seafood-free baseline, you bypass a massive number of global dietary roadblocks.
Oh, it creates a deeply comforting dish that almost anyone can sit down and eat together. It proves that the true identity of kimchi jjigae is not tied to the pork belly or the seafood stock found in other popular variations.
Right, those are just additions.
Yeah. The soul of the dish lives in the fermented kimchi itself and the technique of extracting its flavor through that medium heat simmer.
But, you know, that heavy reliance on fermentation is a serious double-edged sword.
Oh, definitely.
Because if the entire architecture of the stew hinges on perfectly aged, complex Korean cabbage to do the work of a piece of meat, what happens to the home cook who doesn't live anywhere near a specialty market?
The global kitchen problem.
Right. That brings us to the real stress test of this culinary guy surviving in the global kitchen when you might not have the perfect ingredients.
And the guide is refreshingly pragmatic about this reality. It knows it is speaking to an international audience.
It's not pretending everyone is in Seoul.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you are cooking abroad, trying to perfectly recreate a dish that relies on highly specific local fermentation is going to be incredibly difficult.
Sometimes impossible.
Right. So the text focuses relentlessly on hitting a target taste and a target texture. It prepares the cook to use substitute ingredients when authentic local items just aren't on the shelves in their neighborhood grocery store.
But substituting ingredients in a dish with so few components feels like walking a tightrope without a net.
It's risky.
Very risky. If you are missing one of the five core ingredients, you are missing a massive percentage of the flavor profile. And the guide actually warns about common mistakes home cooks make when trying to recreate the stew abroad. So what happens if things go wrong?
Well, the guide acts as a safety net by explaining the mechanics behind those failures.
Okay.
The most common devastating mistake people make overseas is misunderstanding the fundamental role of the primary ingredient.
The cabbage.
Right. They will buy fresh, unfermented cabbage, perhaps toss it in some chili flakes, and boil it for 40 minutes, assuming they're making kimchi jjigae.
Oh, no. And because we just established that the fermentation is acting as the meat substitute, using fresh cabbage is like trying to make chicken noodle soup without the chicken.
That is a perfect analogy.
You aren't building a complex stew. You are just going to get a pot of sweet, watery, limp cabbage.
Exactly. And no amount of substitute thickeners or extra salt will save the dish if you make that foundational error.
Because you've missed the umami.
You have entirely lost the acidic umami base. The guide teaches you that adaptation isn't just swapping one red vegetable for another. It is about mimicking the chemical properties of the missing ingredient.
So how do they suggest doing that?
Well, if your local kimchi isn't fermented or sour enough, you have to understand the mechanics of the target taste well enough to artificially introduce a touch of acid.
Like a cheat code.
Exactly. Perhaps a dash of vinegar or fermented juice to replicate that aged tang. It teaches you to cook with your palate and your brain, not just by blindly following a visual list.
Which raises such a fascinating philosophical question for anyone who loves culinary history.
Oh, the authenticity debate.
Yes. If we are constantly swapping out core ingredients for overseas substitutes, maybe using a different type of local vegetable to mimic a texture, or adding external acids to fake the fermentation, all to avoid these common mistakes and hit that target taste, does the dish eventually lose its original identity?
That's the big question.
At what point does gisori kimchi stop being kimchi jjigae and just become an anonymous spicy vegetable soup?
Is the true magic of a stew its strict authenticity or its inherent ability to adapt to whatever kitchen it finds itself in?
It's basically the ship of Theseus, but applied to a pot of stew.
If you replace every ingredient with a local substitute, is it the same dish?
What does the guide say?
The framework we are analyzing strongly suggests that the magic lies entirely in the adaptation. The identity of kimchi jjigae is remarkably robust.
Wow. Okay.
The text insists on maintaining the medium spice level, the 40-minute simmer, and the extraction of deep umami without meat. As long as you are achieving that specific balance of sour, spicy, and savory, and hitting that comforting, dense stew texture, you are honoring the dish.
So the essence is preserved.
Yes. The guide is arguing that the soul of the food can survive global translation, provided the cook understands the fundamental rules of the pot.
The fundamental rules of the pot. I love that. It's like a stew has this rigid skeletal structure.
Exactly.
As long as you keep those bones intact, you know, the heat, the timing, the acid, you can dress it however you need to based on whatever you can pull from your local pantry.
And understanding that skeletal structure leads us perfectly into the final and perhaps most important objective of this source text.
The bigger picture.
Right. We step back from the single pot simmering on the stove, and we look at the overarching cultural lesson. The text synthesizes all these parameters, the time, the heat, the substitutions, to deliver a much broader takeaway about Korean food as a whole.
So what does this one 40-minute medium spice, vegetarian adaptable stew teach an international audience about an entire nation's culinary history?
It demonstrates that at its everyday domestic core, Korean cuisine is a brilliant study in structured flexibility.
Structural flexibility.
Yes. This stew serves as a microcosm for the broader food culture. We have spent the last few minutes exploring how highly structured it is.
Very strict parameters.
But within that strict framework, it is endlessly flexible. It proves that the cuisine is deeply focused on accessible home cooking, resourcefulness, and flavor extraction, rather than elite, inaccessible techniques.
It's good for the people.
Exactly. By presenting it as a global phenomenon, kimchi stew, Biso de Kimchi, the guide, shows that these culinary principles are universally translatable to any kitchen in the world.
You know, reading through the mechanics of this dish, it really reminded me of the process of learning a new language.
Oh, that's interesting. How so?
Well, when you first start trying to speak something foreign, you don't sit down and try to memorize the entire dictionary.
No, that would be terrible.
It would be completely overwhelming and useless. You start by learning the grammar. You learn the basic sentence structures and how the words relate to each other. Tackling this one 40-minute stew isn't just following a recipe for dinner, it's like learning the grammar of Korean cuisine.
The language analogy works perfectly here. Just like grammar provides the rules for communication, this stew provides the rules for flavor.
Right.
Once you learn that the verb of Korean cooking is often fermentation, you can start conjugating it into completely different dishes.
Oh, I love that.
The ingredients you buy at the store are just the vocabulary. The vocabulary will inevitably change depending on what is in season or what country you were shopping in, but the grammar remains constant.
That makes total sense.
How you balance the funk of the fermentation, how the medium heat extracts the savory notes, how you manage the spice level so it warms the palate instead of scorching it, those are the grammatical rules.
Because once you understand the rules of this specific stew, the rest of the menu starts to make perfect sense.
Exactly.
You start to see those exact same grammatical principles applied to a quick stir fry, a different type of complex soup, or a cold vegetable side dish.
And that is the ultimate value of this culinary masterclass. It takes something that might seem intimidating or completely foreign to an overseas cook, and it breaks it down into a universal language of taste, texture, and time.
It makes it approachable.
It empowers the home cook to experiment within a safe, reliable framework. You learn that cooking this food isn't about tracking down the rarest, most authentic, exotic ingredient imported from thousands of miles away. It's about knowing how to coax maximum flavor out of the everyday items you already have on hand.
It is about taking what you have, understanding the rules, and making something incredible.
Couldn't have said it better.
Well, let's bring this all together, because we have covered some serious culinary ground today. We took what looks like a simple bowl of stew and completely unpacked its architectural profile.
We did. We started by decoding the linguistic footprint, kimchijjigae, and its global aliases, and discovered a highly accessible framework.
The 40-minute rule.
Yes. We explored the 40-minute cook time, the medium difficulty, and a medium spice level that invites the cook into the kitchen rather than scaring them away.
And then we dived into the surprising dietary reality, highlighting how this specific guide defines the dish as entirely meat-free and seafood-free.
That was the big twist.
We looked at the underlying science of fermentation and how those aged acidic compounds do the heavy lifting to build deep, complex flavors that mimic animal fat.
And from there, we navigated the realities of the global kitchen, looking at the challenges of recreating that target taste abroad.
Right, the substitution challenge.
We learned why using fresh, unfermented cabbage is a fatal mistake, and why making smart, thoughtful ingredient substitutions is actually a core part of the stew's true identity, rather than a compromise.
And finally, we zoomed out. We use this single adaptable dish as a microcosm to understand the grammar of Korean cuisine, proving that a recipe shouldn't be a rigid, unyielding prison, but a flexible, resilient framework.
Absolutely.
So the next time you find yourself staring at an unfamiliar ingredient or trying to navigate a new cuisine in your own kitchen, remember the kimchi jjigae mindset.
It's a good mindset to have.
You do not need a massive cut of meat to build depth. Respect the target taste, keep an eye out for those common mistakes, but most importantly, embrace the power of smart adaptation.
Because that framework of adaptation is exactly what allows food to travel across oceans and language barriers, bringing completely different cultures together in the shared universal experience of a warm, comforting meal.
Beautifully said. Now, before we go, I want to leave you, our listener, with a final thought to ponder the next time you fire up the stove.
Let's hear it.
We have just seen how a single, highly adaptable stew can serve as the ultimate 40-minute gateway for a foreigner to understand Korean cuisine. So ask yourself this: what traditional everyday dish from your own culture would serve as the perfect 40-minute blueprint to explain your culinary heritage to a complete stranger? And more importantly, what core ingredients would they absolutely struggle to substitute?
Oh, that is a fantastic question, Chiwon. Thank you for joining us as we unpack this incredible culinary guide.
Thanks for listening. We will see you next time on The Deep Dive.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.